Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Molly Hemingway joins us for a debate preview, and Noel Fritch talks about some bombshell news in regards to January 6th as we try to get closer and closer to the truth. How many feds were involved in January 6th? Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved at the most important organization in America, tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. As always, you can email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Noel Fritch, nationalfile.com, great website. Known Noel for a couple of years now. He does excellent work. Noel, welcome to the program. Had you on before. You have a really interesting exclusive story you guys have been covering here, nationalfile.com, about this guy, Jaden X, otherwise known as John Sullivan. People might remember he didn't look like he fit on January 6th at all. He acted differently. He spoke differently. He was actually wearing a Trump hat as an instigator or whatnot. So, Noel, what the heck is going on? And then also fill us in, did this guy ever see any prison time? Noel, tell us about it.
So Jaden X, John Sullivan, is he spent one night in jail. And
one night?
So National File, one night. And, you know, it's funny, Charlie, after we broke this story, I started getting text messages and DMs all over the continent from, and some of them were the awesome anti-vax Mississippi, they'll say vaccine choice Mississippi mamas. And they were saying he was at our hotel that night, and they knew that something was off with him that night. Well, come to find out in this long form interview that National File's Alicia Powell conducted with the brother of John, Jaden X, his name is James, who is a conservative. James is a conservative. James just aired out all the laundry. He tells us everything about what he knew that's going on with his brother, John Sullivan, Jaden X, ahead of January the 6th, Charlie. And man, it's explosive. It absolutely puts the lie to this whole idea that there was an insurrection. It was a Fed-surrection confirmed by Jaden X's brother, James.
So tell us what you've learned from James. And just to repeat, Jaden X has not been sentenced by the federal government, or he has just kind of been exempt while we have other people in pretrial detention. That's amazing to me. What have we learned?
Yeah, 2.5 years later, there are still people rotting in solitary, right, Charlie? So James went through everything. His words are just astonishing. You can listen to the cutdown interview at nationalfile.com. It's about 8 minutes. It's totally worth listening to. He spells out everything. He says everyone knew the whole way through ahead of time. He says that John, Jaden X, was in touch with big media firms. Okay, the Mockingbird media firms, CNN, mm-hmm. and he mentions Sky News. He mentions a few others. They all knew that he was going in there to get footage. That was the plan. He shared with them, according to James, all of the proof of the planning, which was taking place on Discord servers in a bunch of the Antifa chat rooms on Discord. And so this stuff has not seen the light of day. This is massively exculpatory evidence for all of the targets of the Biden DOJ and all these folks who are sadly rotting in prison. He uses some crazy words. Their plan was to go in there and kind of get footage of, in his words, patriots misbehaving, is essentially
what he said. So let's play cut 74. This is the cut you're talking about. Play cut 74.
And I know that he was quoted by, I think it's like Sky News and a couple other media outlets to get sensational footage on January 6th. He had corresponded with CNN and MSNBC and a couple other news organizations, showing them the Discord servers that he was a part of, that were basically, and I know that people say they don't exist, but like Antifa Discord servers, where they were planning January 6th.
So help us make sense of that. So who is talking here, and why? What is the significance here?
So that is James. That is the brother of John, the brother of Jaden X. And James himself is a conservative. They're from Utah. And he's explaining how ahead of time he knew that what John's plans were to go ahead and be in league with a bunch of essentially undercover agitators. James even mentions that John met up with Ray Epps ahead of Freedom Plaza, which was on January the 5th. So they were in contact with one another ahead of January 6th. It's not like they just happened to be there and they were following the quote unquote Patriots. He even says at one point in the interview that Jaden X was actually passing out metal rods and giving specific instructions to the quote unquote Patriots. And we have to assume that they were basically all feds, the ones doing the violence, running up to the building and breaking windows with these metal rods. Charlie, this is really explosive stuff. It should honestly set a whole bunch of people free or get them retrials or get them wins in their appeals if there is any justice or rule of law left in this American Republic of ours.
I'm cynical and skeptical. Play cut 78, please.
From what I know is that Ray Epps and my brother John had met up prior to going to the Freedom Plaza. And they were at, if you look at the video of Ray Epps, people calling him a see John right next to him.
So, Noel, that's the brother of Jaden X saying that Ray Epps and this guy met up before they went there. Tell us what that means.
A lot of this is going to have to be sorted out in a court of law, and these gentlemen are going to have to answer for their involvement in this Fedsurrection. It seems very clear what's going on here. I think there's some more footage and audio that further explains what was going on with Jaden X and a woman by the name of Jade Sacker that might help shed some light on the Ray Epps element here. So Jade Sacker is a, quote, photojournalist, and she works for a creative artist agency, CAA, which is a big L.A., almost like think tank kind of deep state placement agency for Hollywood. And she's there to do a documentary on Jaden and John. James, the brother James, about their family having been riven by politics. That documentary actually did come out. She is the woman that you can hear famously. A lot of the listeners might remember that as Jaden X was breaking into the Capitol and they are ecstatic, she's the woman who's helping to get a lot of the footage. And he's saying, hey, I told you I was going to get you some awesome footage. I told you I was going to get some awesome footage. And so we actually have evidence, you know, on camera of the fact that this was all premeditated from John Jaden X himself. He admits there on January the 6th that he had already been telling her that this was going to happen.
So let's play cut 77. This is an allegation that the media knew ahead of time that there was a J6 operation that was going to happen. Play cut 77.
He showed them that that it was going to happen, that something was going to happen in the Capitol. He showed them the Discord servers. He said that it's already planned. This is how we're going to get them in. This is how we're going to get them. We have 16 different camera people that will be going in on both sides of Capitol to capture, you know, basically Patriots slipping up, you know. So it was all planned. The entire thing was planned.
There's so much wrong with this, and I just want to repeat. So what do we know outside of these tapes? Noel, let's just take a step back for a second. The conduct that John Sullivan, Jaden X, did that day. I mean, what do we know about it? I'm asking for a reason because it seems that every single person has been indicted. John Sullivan was indicted on civil disorders, restricted building ground stuff, or violent entry, but you're saying he has not served any meaningful prison time, right?
That all went away. Every bit of that went away for him.
Huh.
Yes, sir. And it's fascinating, right? And Mr. Epps himself also is on camera and on audio asking people to go essentially storm the Capitol. And, of course, no charges for him. And the New York Times writes 4,000-word puff
Isn't
pieces on him and
how
put upon he is.
Based on your reporting, based on your gut, again, this is just your opinion. I'm trying to help us all out here from some stupid lawsuit. How many feds do you think were involved on January 6th?
I think it's easily into the hundreds. That's my opinion. I think it's very obvious now. National File has some other reporting that I can tease for you now coming up having to do with some of these trials and the DOJ and some of the prosecuting attorneys colluding to essentially prosecute a lot of the witnesses so as to take them out of the defenses. Some of this was reported on earlier this year. National File will have some bombshell information coming out about the DOJ and the FBI, Special Agent Nicole Miller specifically, colluding to keep these men and women in jail. Which is just anathema. It's not our republic. This is not the way this should be. There is a reckoning coming.
I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com. 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what his life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Noel Fritch is with us. Noel, give us an update, because I'm seeing these images and I am not seeing Republican outrage. In fact, I'm just kind of seeing shrugging of the shoulders, rolling of the eyes. National disgrace, January 6 prisoners given a little piece of paper to lay on the ground and a bucket to use the restroom. We would be outraged if this was the conditions of Gitmo. What's going on, Noel?
Well, I can give you firsthand experience on that, Charlie. Last summer, and lover or hater, Marjorie Taylor Greene actually spiked a big rally that none other than Ashley Babbitt's mom, Mickey Whithoff, was going to have there in Washington, D.C., it was because a lot of people are scared of all of the, you know, people, the media, the Mockingbird media throws around the word bigot or whatever. And some of our elected representatives who are the bravest on TV, you know, behind the scenes, they're still scared of their shadow on a lot of stuff. And I would throw Marjorie into that category. Obviously, she's been badly behaving ever since. With Kevin McCarthy's stuff, we do need these Freedom Caucus guys to find their spines. Our guy down in here in North Carolina, where I am, Dan Bishop, is sadly going to leave the Freedom Caucus and run for Attorney General. But maybe he can help us shore up our own borders here. It's a mess out there, Charlie, with these prisoners. There's a lot of silence out there. I know a lot of them are just totally desperate for help with their funding of their defenses. And I'm working to help that happen some, and I know you have been too.
Yes.
We need to – this is a top-level priority. If we don't have, you know, the Fourth Amendment and the rest of the Constitution in force, you know, right to a speedy trial, you know, no improper search and seizure, all of these sorts of things, then there's not much of a republic left. And a lot of people can feel in their gut that something's going wrong here in this country. And it comes down to a lot of that Mockingbird media with the pitting of America against each other based on things like what happened on January the 6th. And it's all artifice and it's all theater. And it's like the Shakespeare play says, you know, all the world's a stage and the men and women are merely players from As You Like It. That's what we're looking at here. We're looking at a major theatrical event that happened on January the 6th. And here we are nearly like, you know, three and a half years later or whatever. And we're still talking about the thing. So,
well, it's because it's made the regime more powerful. President Trump, when he gets in, we need mass pardons. We need pardons across the board. And I mean, you have this, look at 42. I mean, what did this man do to deserve treatment like this? Noel, do you know? I mean, what is it breaking a window, assaulting a police officer? I'm not justifying those things, but This is cruel and unusual punishment against the Constitution, right, Noel? And if we have equal justice under the law, we got murderers, we got gangbangers, we got thugs, we got arsonists, we got rapists that do whatever the heck they want. And, I mean, we need mass pardons, mass clemency, day one. I mean, this needs to be cleaned up. Do you happen to know the circumstance of that one, Noel? I'm just curious because it's circulating.
I saw that go viral. There are a thousand of these things, Charlie, and I'm trying to keep up with as many of them as I can. And that's part of their tactic, is to sort of flood the zone with all of this stuff happening. And guess what? They have the full
exactly
faith,
right. Yes,
of U.S. government to do that with. And it's hard for us just in the conservative and independent media to keep up with all of these.
Yeah,
stories.
I think that's so smart. And I mean, look, there's not like there's a lack of legal money on the right. And if I could give some constructive feedback, I'm all for suing to get the Ten Commandments in some cemetery. And that's great. okay? But the religious liberty groups, they need to start deploying some of that money they've raised to come in and defend these guys. Defend the alternate electors, defend this, because these groups are like, oh, we only do it for religious liberty. Look, I'm all for that. I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, no, I get it. But we need some of that lawfare money to come in and defend these guys. You want to talk about Christian principles? How about the defense of the innocent? Final thoughts, Noel Fritch.
Absolutely, and we've seen folks trying to defend the innocent, whether adults wrongly accused, even rightly accused, down to babies, now with the sights of the DOJ and the FBI on their back merely for fighting to protect the innocent, like the unborn here in this country. It's very un-American. It's very Soviet. That's the regime we live in.
They're grinding us down, man. That's what it is. I mean, I know you wanted to talk about the Hegelian dialectic. They want to spin it up to try to grind the gears for the antithesis, the synthesis. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Right. They need the conflict. Conflict theory of Hegelianism is that actually is what moves the state forward. It is the tension. Get that grinding gears moving. Nationalfile.com, Noel, great reporting. We cannot forget about these J6 defendants. I'm telling you, if Donald Trump becomes president, I will be right there, not as a staffer, God forbid, but as an advisor and a friend, pushing pardons. Like, we need to get these things going, like, immediately, day one. Just got to start signing pieces of paper because these guys have been made to suffer in a cruel and unusual way. Noel, great job. Thanks so much. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. We are saving babies with preborn by providing free ultrasounds. When you introduce a girl to her baby by providing an ultrasound, you're giving her the truth at the most important time in her life. And more than 85% of the time when she sees the baby and hears the baby's heartbeat, she will choose life. The voices that call themselves pro-choice are loud and proud. And they are everywhere. It might feel like an uphill battle, but there is no better fight to fight than with the truth of an ultrasound. $140 gives 5 mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 10 babies. For just $28 a month, you can save a baby a month for less than a dollar a day. And $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Whether you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, that opportunity is just a phone call or click away. I'm a donor to Preborn, and you should be too. Call 833-850-BABY. That is 833-850-2229. Or go to preborn.org/Kirk. If you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, the opportunity is just right there. Go to preborn.org/Kirk. Okay, joining us now is the legendary Molly Hemingway. Does a great job. Molly, thank you for taking time with us. How are you doing today?
Great. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Thank you, Molly. You know, Molly, every time I get in front of an audience and I ever get a skeptical question, oh, Charlie, do you really think the election was whatever? I say, you got to read Molly's book. And it's a conversation ender because they don't like reading. Your book, Rigged, is, I think, the most important document that came post-2020 election, where it's all facts, not speculation, all facts. The book is called Rigged by Molly Hemingway. I want to get to that topic in a second, Molly, but first, your reaction, Donald Trump up 40 or 50 points, not debating. How should we think about it?
Well, I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say I'm actually kind of excited for the debate tonight, and only embarrassed because I like to think I'm not super into this kind of horse race political stuff. But I'm excited to see how these candidates appear. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they appear without the distraction of President Trump. I think, you know, he takes over a stage in such a big way that it can, you know, just can eat up the whole event. As for him, like, I understand why both he and President Biden are not debating. They are so far ahead in their polls that most political strategists would say it's all risk, no reward to go on to a debate stage with people who are so far behind them. But I also think it's true that President Trump does very well in debates, that him taking out each opponent in 2015 and 2016 was why he was so good against Hillary Clinton, that he hadn't debated for 4 years when it was up against Joe Biden, and it kind of showed because he hadn't had any primary debates. So I think he also should think about, even though it's against the conventional wisdom that when you're 40 plus points ahead of your opponent or however much it is at this point, you would never debate, I think there are advantages to debating as well.
So as we look at kind of the Republican field, what candidates, Molly, are you going to, or people on the stage, because it's hard to call them candidates, it's not much of a race, people on stage, are you really going to be most interested in? Like, if you were to kind of say, I'm this guy, I think he has a lot to say, this person shouldn't be around, I'll give you my take. I'm really excited for Vivek. I think he's super interesting and entertaining. I'm going to be hoping that Governor DeSantis kind of changes his tune. Maybe we see Ron 2.0. And quite honestly, I don't need to hear from Chris Christie at all. Your thoughts, Molly Hemingway?
I kind of want to see Ron 1.0. And what I mean by that is he's inarguably our greatest governor in the country. He is a huge, what he has done in Florida is so impressive.
I agree
and
with
so
you.
Many Republican voters like it. And I feel like his campaign has not really been able to, I mean, just by virtue of what it is, you're going to Iowa, you're going to New Hampshire. But what people really like is kind of the Florida version, what he's able to do in Florida. So I hope he reintroduces himself just as the person he is, not a change or anything like that. But he never really got that chance to introduce himself. And I'm mostly interested in him and Vivek because I just think between those two and President Trump, they have like 85% of the party behind them. And they are clearly the future of the party. All of this other stuff, like the Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, that's like the Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney more, you know, that era. And I think that we are just, the numbers kind of show this. That's just long gone. And it's taking a while for professional DC or the political class to accept that, but it's just true.
So what I'm going to be most interested about, Molly, tonight, and I will be watching, I'll also be watching Trump-Tucker thing, which will be something, is the foreign policy aspect, because on stage, they almost all agree on foreign policy absent Vivek, where there is kind of this consensus of foreign wars, neoliberalism. Do you think we're going to kind of see a little bit of the tension of old right versus new right? I'm talking about ideologically, less personality tonight in the debate.
Yeah, when you were talking about what you're looking for, this is actually what I'm most interested in, is to see how this issue and a few other issues, how they're dealt with by the candidates on the stage. And I would say that actually Ron DeSantis is also against that like weird neocon phase that the Republican Party went through from like 2000 to 2015, which is not what we were seeing from the right, from, you know, really going back to Eisenhower. That was a completely different thing. The Eisenhower to Reagan and even George H.W. Bush were very much about strong national interest based foreign policy. And then they had that diversion into the almost like Clinton-esque neocon interventionism. And then that's not the future. But DeSantis did a great job, I thought, in his interview with Bret Baier, who will be one of the moderators tonight, and talking about his foreign policy and how he does not support the sort of DC consensus on, for instance, the proxy war with Russia. So I know he has donor tension and that his donors want him to do the neocon thing. And that's a problem that he's dealing with. But I am very curious to see how he handles that.
So I now want to kind of broaden this. You have composed the book Rigged, and now we're kind of, I think, entering into the 2024 version. We're going to kind of live through elements of this. Molly, I'm very worried that there are outright calls now to cancel the presidential election. I mean, it takes a lot to kind of make me say, wow, that's interesting. To have the New York Times, Molly, say to improve democracy, get rid of elections, not even like rigging, let's just get rid of them, not to mention the 14th Amendment stuff and many other things. How should we approach this as a movement? Preemptively, what are the greatest threats towards interfering or rigging the 2024 election?
Well, I worry that we've in large part already gotten rid of elections as we understood them. And so you're too young to remember this, but there were periods of time where people were very concerned about uninformed voters. They wanted people not just to vote, but to vote with like a knowledge of the issues and the candidates and what the effects of voting would be. And it was almost a bipartisan thing where people would study it and write about it. And now nobody talks about it because the Democrat Party and other powerful institutions that are associated with the Democrat Party have basically moved us away from campaigns and elections into just raw ballot operations where they are locating people with pulses who might not know there's an election, might not know the issues in play, might not know who the candidates are. And they're just kind of taking over their whole role in the electoral process, you know, getting them registered and then getting the ballots filled out and getting them put in, even if the people are, you know, it's just something that we used to not think was a good and healthy way to have democratic republics. And so you are seeing this in a lot of states where you just have ballot operations. The candidates don't debate because they don't think they need to worry about persuading anybody to vote because they understand that they've got the ballot operation in the bag. And they don't, you know, they don't need to persuade anybody that their cause is just. And it is a threat to the republic, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've seen the proper pushback. So let me ask you just on the criminalization side of Donald Trump and the trials he's facing, what would a healthy Republican Party response be, top to bottom, state, local, and federal, to the ongoing criminalization of Donald Trump and the alternate electors in Michigan, which no one's talking about, Rose Rook, 81 years old, from Paw Paw, Michigan? If the Republican Party was healthy, how would the Republican Party respond to all of this?
I think a smart, sane party should have seen the moment that that election happened, not just that they had to work to make sure that we never had elections run like that ever again, but to also be able to articulate and understand what had happened. And that is a big reason why I wrote the book, with the actual story of how elections were taken over by the left, how Democrat Party operatives kind of like came in and took over government election offices, how they were financed by Mark Zuckerberg, how big tech and corporate media have conspired to do things that if it happened in any other country, we would say that the elections were not free or fair. And you might not want to talk about election integrity. You might wish that things associated with the election integrity movement hadn't happened. But if you couldn't see that we would be at a point where the Department of Justice and other Democrat operatives would be using this as their 2024 campaign strategy, you should just get out of politics, because it was pretty much obvious by November 4th, 2020. And so everyone needs to understand that this is not about, you know, particular individuals. This is about an attempt to make it illegal to oppose the regime. And it is going to affect everybody. It already is affecting a huge swath of people. But being informed about what actually happened is key, because, you know, you don't want to say any of the crazy conspiracy theories that people put out there that actually damaged the election integrity movement. But what was done needs to be addressed. And so understanding, like, I'm actually shocked that Georgia became a focus of this, because that's actually a state that had a major problem. And I wrote about it in the book.
Yes, you did.
We've also written about it at the Federalist. There were actually a greater than the margin of victory number of votes that, according to Georgia law, were done illegally. So it's like the worst state they could have picked to criminalize it. But you have to know the issues. You have to understand the issues in play, what Georgia state law is, so you can speak about it well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, if you look at the actual technical issue, I mean, you know this super well, Molly, we've talked about it, from the consent decree, because there were two consent decrees, not just the RNC one, but the consent decree when it came to the signature verification thing that came right before COVID, awfully suspicious. And then the mass mail-in balloting, Georgia goes from 247,000 mail-in ballots to 2.4 million mail-in ballots. But Molly, what bothers me, and I don't think this has received enough attention, there's so many elements to this, is the criminalization of the lawyers. The lawyers, people that were giving legal advice to Donald Trump. That this is a Rubicon that's never been crossed before. Your thoughts, Molly Hemingway?
Well, we started seeing this happen even during the Trump administration, when they were violating like attorney-client privilege to go after Trump, and people were just kind of like ho-hum about it. That is the way that a republic falls, when you can't have confidence in rule of law and understanding that even if you don't like someone, or like you really think that like Republicans don't have a right to exist, that there are barriers to what you can do to keep them out of power. But again, in this case, I think it's important to understand that you can have disputes about the proper legal approach, but that is very different from criminalizing legal advice, or, you know, so to go back to what I was just saying about the number of illegal votes, the lawsuit that was in Georgia was about how the Trump team believed they had as many as 150,000, I think was their number, votes that should not have been counted toward the contest. And because votes are private, you don't know who people are voting for. So the law says only if there are a certain number of votes that are greater than the margin of error, you're supposed to actually redo an election. And there's this guy down there in Georgia who's like super wonky, who understood that Georgia was not doing a good job of enforcing this one part of their law, where if you move from one county to another and you've lived there for 30 days, you're not allowed to vote in the old county that you used to live in. And there, that actually was happening to a pretty high number of people. And so that was part of the lawsuit. So when you hear Donald Trump say, we just want you to find X number of votes, that's what it's in reference to.
Yes.
That's actually so good smart legal advice to know what the state, know what the state law is, and to talk about it. Also, alternate electors was an attempt to stay in, it was an attempt to be constitutional as they contested the election. They understood that even if they won all of these debates and won all these lawsuits, but they hadn't arranged their alternate electors, then it would all be for naught.
That's right.
Is not criminal. That's actually an attempt to be constitutional. You can disagree with the strategy. That's fine. But it's very scary. Yes.
Check out her book, Rigged. It is terrific. We are living through a rigging of the 2024 election. By the way, I didn't know if you know this or not, Molly, but Al Sharpton thinks you're a racist for using that word.
Donald Trump himself, their leader, using the term riggers, which clearly rhymes with the N-word. I mean, this is not
exactly
10 years ago or 30 years ago when we marched against him on the Central Park Fire. I'm talking about he, and within the last 24 hours, used the term riggers. Is this the kind of party the Republicans want to show the country that they are?
Al Sharpton, Molly Hemingway, he has something to say about your book title, Molly.
Yeah, I take all my thoughts on racial healing and comedy from this guy. So not too concerned about what he's saying here.
It's really remarkable. And just making stuff up, I guess if it rhymes, it's what you mean. So Molly, kind of looking from now till the November 2024 election, having studied the 2020 election and how unprepared we are, what are one or two action items of things we need to fix, things we need to improve, something that's happening in real time that we have to get on if we want to improve our likelihood of winning back the White House in November of 24?
Okay, I have like good news and bad news. So on the good news front, it's good to remember that the 2020 election was unlike anyone that we'd ever had, and it was massively helped in terms of the corruption issues by the COVID pandemic and the response to that. And people were able to like move through all of these crazy election related laws. And in many places, that is no longer the case. It's also obviously true that in many places, those are now permanent changes. But it's only 43,000 votes across three states that controlled the 2020 election. Yes. And so if you don't like what Democrats are doing and you're a Republican, you don't have to be anywhere near as good as they are. You just have to kind of be in the game of moving to a ballot operation thing. Like, it's not so much about, do you have the best arguments? Are you able to persuade? And it's more about like finding some of the millions of voters who don't vote and running a ballot operation associated with that. I don't like it. I'm not saying it's good, but I think if you want to win an election and improve things, that's what you should do. And it's also true that since 2020, you have had, I mean, I think it could be hundreds of thousands of activists who are now aware and on the ground, concerned about election integrity and monitoring their situation in their state. And that is a much better situation for Republicans than they had even a few years ago. But the bad news thing is that whereas in 2020, it was Mark Zuckerberg putting in $419 million in the blue areas of swing states. And that was a lot. Mm-hmm. One of the first things that President Biden did in office was to basically take that Zuckerberg program and require each federal agency to take the like quasi unlimited power of the American taxpayer purse to the same end. And so they are doing things that used to always be viewed as just completely corrupt, to have, you know, like target election related activities to welfare recipients or work study programs at schools. And so they are doing what they're doing with the power and the power of the purse of the federal government. And so I would be really on top of what's happening on college campuses, shenanigans there.
Big time.
Or other, I don't know, just other federal agencies, what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a underreported thing where he's using the federal government money as a get-out-the-vote operation in an unprecedented way. Should House Republicans maybe do a hearing or two, at least make them feel as if we're watching them, right?
Well, you know what, Charlie? This relates also to what we were just talking about the weaponization of rule of law. You actually did have members of Congress demand to find out what is happening at federal agencies because it should all be public. Each agency was required to hand over to literally Susan Rice what their plans were for election takeover. And they have not turned those over, or if they have turned them over, they are so heavily redacted that you can't figure out what it is. People are having to engage in lawsuits to get any information. And yes, absolutely, hearings would be good. There have been actually some hearings and some efforts to find out more. But if I were the Republicans in Congress, I would just start demanding hearings and correspondence on everything, every issue related to this.
Absolutely. Molly Hemingway, author of Rigged. Thanks so much, and we'll have you on again soon. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.